Hello and welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast, where we talk with nurses working at the intersection of health and environment. My name is Beth Shank. I'm a registered nurse in Missoula, Montana, and hosting today's podcast. Today, I'm excited to talk with our guest, Susan Wilburn, who is Sustainability Director for Healthcare Without Harms, Global Green and Healthy Hospital Network, working all over the world. Hello, Susan.
Hi, Beth. Great to talk with you.
You too. Well, tell us a bit about everything that you do, including how you got into nursing in the first place, how you got interested in environmental health, some of your background with your really interesting career, and then what you're working on now.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm a nurse, and I also have studied public health and epidemiology, and I got started in nursing because it was a great way to match my interest in science, in mathematics, in art, and in adventure. And I thought, well, I could get a degree in nursing and then do anything else I might want to do. And my father and my sister were both information technology computer specialists. And I thought for a little while that I might combine nursing with that, but it didn't work out. And I first started thinking about environmental health long before I thought about it professionally. And that was because I grew up in Ohio along the shores of Lake Erie, where I chased my two older brothers into the lake and therefore had to learn how to swim. But many years when I was a child, we had to pick the dead fish, the dead perch off the lake, off the beach in order to go swimming. And it struck me that that probably wasn't a good thing. And I had no idea, but also during the time when I was a child, there were, this was a time when people would go to fish fries on Fridays. And for a couple of years, we couldn't eat the most prolific fish in Lake Erie because it was contaminated with mercury and with lead. And again, I didn't think of how the contamination happened until much later in my life, but it really sort of dripped into my brain as some issue or problem that had affected me as a child that had to be fixed. And I grew up during the time when the Environmental Protection Act and agency were created. And it was not so long after that that we were able to swim in the lake and to eat the fish that were no longer contaminated. It was also during that time that the Cuyahoga River, which flows through Cleveland past the steel mills that used to operate and into Lake Erie, caught on fire. And some people will remember a great song about the burning river by Randy Newman. And all of that changed my thinking about health and environment. And then when I became a nurse, I, not long after starting in nursing, was this awareness about mercury contamination that I really didn't connect until much later to the fish that I couldn't eat, but that this instrument of healing that I was holding every day in my life as a nurse turned out to be something that was, again, it was working against the health of the children and adults that I was taking care of. And that really galvanized my thinking about health and environment. And I was always active from nursing school on, thinking politically and about health policy, because I worked in a hospital where we had public wards and private wards. And I saw that the quality of care was different. And I knew that was wrong. So I was advocating from very beginning for access to health care and for single payer health care. And in my political work, then I went to work after a decade of working in the hospitals to the Nurses Association. And I started to advocate for nurses and nurses' health and learn more about the environmental exposures of nurses in a hospital as a workplace and what it was doing to cause, for example, in Europe and in the U.S., 1.5 to 3 times the rate of occupational asthma among health workers compared to the population as a whole. And so then I learned about how latex allergy was literally killing nurses or permanently disabling people like anesthesiologists and dentists. And the alternative to latex in the early days was vinyl, which I learned pretty quickly was a bad alternative. And it was a bad alternative because vinyl is a poor barrier against bloodborne pathogens and chemicals, but it also is toxic. And polyvinyl chloride is toxic in its production, use, and in its disposal. It's the even worse yet, because at that time, most healthcare waste, and now still in most countries, healthcare waste is burned, sometimes in an incinerator and sometimes thrown on the ground and lit fire to. And that from vinyl and other vinyl products like IV tubing causes dioxins. And as I started to learn about health and environment, I was able to learn from Holly Shaner, one of the pioneer nurses who was working on environmental health in the healthcare setting, that dioxin was a known human carcinogen. It was an endocrine disruptor. And here came another example of the work I was doing in health causing damage to health. And I needed to learn more about how to protect health workers from latex allergy with safer alternatives. And I needed to learn how to engage with my colleagues about how to not only treat waste more safely, but reduce the amount of waste that we were creating and segregate waste better and learn ways to recycle and learn ways to stop using some of the hazardous materials that we use in the healthcare setting. So this all occurred as I was developing a career in both policy and nursing advocacy through the Nurses Association. So I worked for a number of years for the Washington State Nurses Association, and then I went to the American Nurses Association, where I was a senior specialist for occupational and environmental health for a number of years. And while I was there, I got to know the colleagues at the International Council of Nurses and took an opportunity to take a sabbatical and go to Geneva, Switzerland to work with ICN on occupational and environmental health. And ICN, the International Council of Nurses, passed a resolution, a policy about the toxic impacts of healthcare and healthcare waste that I was privileged to be able to assist national nurses associations around the world. And I think there was something about 165 national nurses associations to help them create their own national policies and begin to be active in that area of work. And, you know, just last year, ICN is promulgating a new standard on climate change and health to assist nurses in making this link between health and the change to our planet, the planet that we rely on to support life, and that is becoming uninhabitable through climate change and air pollution. So the ICN now has a position moving forward on that issue. And while I was in Geneva, I had another opportunity where the work I'd been doing with the ICN and with the American Nurses Association lended itself to a new project that was being started by the World Health Organization. And I was tapped by colleagues to go to work at WHO, where I spent 8 years working on occupational and environmental health, mostly health sectors, occupational and environmental health. And during that time, worked together with the International Labor Organization and UNAIDS to develop and implement policies protecting health workers from exposure to bloodborne pathogens and to chemical hazards. So it was a great privilege. It was a tremendous experience. And then 4 years ago, I moved back to the West Coast of the United States. I now live in a small houseboat in the harbor in Olympia, Washington, the capital. and took a job with Healthcare Without Harm. Healthcare Without Harm being the organization for environmental justice and environmental sustainability of healthcare practices that is now 22 years old and a pioneer in this work that I learned from when I was at the American Nurses Association. So pulling together the dead fish from Lake Erie with mercury in my hands to latex allergy, and now to working with the Global Green and Healthy Hospitals to implement what is a 10-goal framework for sustainability of health practices that includes green buildings, energy efficiency and renewable energy. It includes locally sourced and organic food, less toxic and safer chemicals, water quality, water conservation. And I'm going to forget the other five goals that include leadership. And we have within this network now, we just achieved our 1,000th member, institutional member, and that represents 32,000 hospitals in 51 countries. And within the network, we have the 2020 Healthcare Climate Challenge, where hospitals have made commitments to become more, to reduce their carbon footprint, to become more resilient in the face of climate emergencies, and to develop leadership and advocacy so that health professionals are the mouthpiece and the voice of health for our public and populations and communities, so they learn about this link between health and environment. I have a new project that is just starting that is so exciting, that is working on sustainable health in procurement. So looking at the procurement practices of hospitals and health systems and UN agencies like WHO and the UN Development Program, UNDP, to make our procurement practices more sustainable. And this project that we just started just a few weeks ago is to work in 10 countries. And Healthcare Without Harm's role is to work in Brazil, China, India, and South Africa. And UNDP together is, UNDP is leading the work in six other countries that include Moldova and Ukraine in Eastern Europe, Tanzania and Zambia in Africa, Vietnam in Southeast Asia, and Guatemala in Latin America. So it is a really exciting time for a four-year project to set standards for procurement that are less toxic, that have reduced greenhouse gas emissions, and that conserve resources, and to build capacity with health systems and with UN agency procurement officers to be able to implement more sustainable practices. And through the UN's purchasing power, the United Nations buys over $5 billion in health products on an annual basis. And through their purchasing power, the UN is working with their suppliers of health products to make the manufacturing and distribution of those products more sustainable.
Terrific. That's such a needed project, I'm sure, around the world, but here too. And I know that Healthcare Without Harm has been a real leader in environmentally preferable purchasing. But let me back up just a minute to ask a bit. Well, first of all, congratulations on just a fantastic career, and it's inspiring to hear about it. And I've known of your work for some time and see you as a real leader in this area, an early adopter of, you know, recognizing the pollution that comes from healthcare and the hypocrisy, really, of creating health by causing more health problems. But I wanted to just ask a little bit so I can have a better understanding of the international perspective on this. It sounds like there's a tremendous amount of energy, that there are many countries jumping on board, such an impressive number of 32,000 different hospitals. Could you juxtapose your view in terms of the international approach to dealing with healthcare pollution compared to American?
Interesting question. Well, just like outside of the health sector, the United States is one of the most intense countries in terms of our greenhouse gas emissions and our production of waste, that we are not an efficient country at all. And in Europe's hospitals, which are equally modern and for which the care is as good or better a standard of care in the United States, use about one-third the energy that we use. So there's something that we can all learn from Europe and from many places. The other thing that's interesting and important about the Europe health system and Europe policy is there is a policy in Europe called REACH. And that policy is a chemicals policy that requires that before you can put a new chemical on the market, it has to be evaluated for its health impacts. And so it has to be evaluated and restricted if there are health impacts such as cancer or developmental disabilities or neurotoxicity, if the products are mutagenic, reproductive hazards, et cetera. Where in the United States, we do not have a similar protection. There are over 80,000 chemicals in use in the modern world, and we have limited knowledge, probably less. We know the health impacts of less than 3,000 of those chemicals. So it's really interesting and really important work to be able to improve the policy in the United States and to assist and be aware of how healthcare systems in Europe are implementing the policy. Another interesting European policy is for sustainable public procurement. And so hospitals in Sweden and Denmark, Austria, United Kingdom, and Germany have all been implementing ways to change their procurement practices. There also are a number of global environmental conventions or in instruments of policy that countries sign on to. They include the Stockholm Convention on Persistent Organic Pollutants, which has now been in full force for over 15 years, which is one of those POPs or persistent organic pollutants is dioxins that so that all hospitals are now having to work to reduce the incineration of waste. Now, this is an interesting place where the US has been a leader because since 2008, when the US Environmental Protection Agency applied the Clean Air Act to healthcare medical waste incinerators for the first time, then it became too expensive to do the kind of pollution control that incineration would need to meet those clean air standards so that the air that we breathe is breathable. And so hospitals all around the United States, there went from like 700 to less than 20 medical waste incinerators over the course of 10 years or so to meet those standards. There also, there's a wide variety we see of experiences in the developing countries and the lesser developed countries from really healthcare settings where they don't even have electricity or they have very unreliable electricity to in the same country, the most advanced settings like you will see in the United States.
It's really great to just get some perspective about what is happening in other countries, and I've been aware of the some of the ways that Europe particularly is well ahead of us in terms of climate change, chemicals, energy efficiency, etc. So I just want to shift a little bit to the topic of climate change, especially from through an international lens, because here in the US, there's lots and lots of people working on it, and healthcare in some instances is really taking a lead. We really appreciate that healthcare contributes 10% of greenhouse gases in the US. However, also, just as is obvious right now, we're kind of in a bit of a dark ages as well in terms of our international leadership or lack thereof. But from what I can tell, there's tremendous focus and clarity about climate change around the world. Could you comment on that, especially from your perspective through healthcare?
Yeah, yes, Beth. It is really interesting that climate change is accepted as a scientific reality just about everywhere. And also to a large extent in the U.S., except from our current government and some climate deniers that are fed by industry who, while they know and have known the fossil fuel industry for decades, that the burning of fossil fuels, gasoline, coal, worst of all, causes greenhouse gas emissions. They have tried to bury that fact. It's kind of like tobacco. And you know, it was 25 years that the tobacco industry hid from us the research showing that smoking caused cancer. And it wasn't until the Surgeon General came out with a report that documented that, that the world, the US and the world started to shift away from smoking. And then it was in 2003 that the World Health Assembly adopted the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. Now, for the last almost a decade, various resolutions have come forward through the World Health Assembly about the link between climate and health and the impact of greenhouse gases and other air pollutants on health, so that the global burden of disease from air pollution now has demonstrated by WHO that there's something like 7 million excess deaths per year across the world from air pollution. The other thing that's interesting about the health sector and countries in general, you know, countries are recognizing the impact of coal. And we have an administration that's still talking about there being such a thing as clean coal. And the hospitals, I work with a hospital in Beijing in China, where we have a case study on our greenhospitals.net website where they eliminated the use of their coal-fired power plant and switched to natural gas. And across China, they are shifting away from burning coal. And I was just in China 2 weeks ago for an exploratory mission for the beginning of this project on procurement. So I was meeting with UN agencies, UNICEF, WHO, UNDP. I was meeting with government agencies, building and architects, and hospital systems leaders to begin planning for the project on how they're going to implement it. And, you know, Beijing is pretty notorious for air pollution. Well, the air we had beautiful blue skies. And I was so happy to be able to remark when we had a program on climate and health that it's, you know, so great to appreciate clean air and being able to breathe the air. And part of that is because China is really reducing their coal-fired power plants and really taking to heart this issue of climate change and its link to health. And while the U.S. is still the highest per capita emitter of greenhouse gases, China has surpassed us. But China has already begun to peak in their use. You may recall that in the Paris negotiations, the president of China, Xi Jinping, said that they were going to peak by 2030 and made that commitment that they would stop increasing the greenhouse gas emissions from the development of their country, which is still very undeveloped. But it's already happening. And there's a program called the Peaking Cities that many cities in the United States are also a part of. And in China, there are many cities that have already peaked. They've already hit their top greenhouse gas emission, and they're on their way down, so that we have some hope that this planet will remain habitable.
That's terrific, and that's inspiring, especially with the visual of imagining the very polluted skies and actually then seeing clean blue sky air. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, because of your work with hospitals particularly, I just wanted to see what you could tell us about your work with nurses in other nations. Do nurses have strong voices? Have you been able to help mobilize nurses? Are nurses the ones leading the way? Or tell us a little bit about that.
You know, it depends on the health system and it depends on the country. Where there is strong nursing leadership in Europe and in Africa and in some Asian countries, and in the Middle East, where nurses are strong, nurses are in the forefront and great leaders around health and environment. Where the nursing profession is less strong, it's more the physicians that are dominating this work on health and environment. And I was a week ago in India working with colleagues in the Center for Chronic Disease Control, who are Healthcare Without Harm's partner for green hospitals in India. And they were doing a whole research project interviewing physicians about climate and health, air pollution and health, to see what their understanding was in order to more engage physicians in advocacy. And I spoke with them and said, oh, well, are you speaking with the nurses? Would you consider interviewing nurses? They said, well, we hadn't considered it, but because you're such a visible nurse speaking out, we'll try to integrate this in our next time around. So I think, you know, just one nurse can make a huge difference. And it's so important for nurses. And I am often in groups where I am the sole nurse to be able to stand up and say, the reason why I'm active in health and environment is because nurses think of health in a holistic fashion. Nurses think about the environments where people live and work and play and go to school. And that makes a difference in our approach to healthcare and why we're involved in health and environment.
Yeah, it's just such a natural fit, isn't it? And in, at least in the U.S., we also have a professional obligation in terms of our standard of practice that says the registered nurse practices in an environmentally safe and healthy manner. And that may be reflected around the world. I'm not sure, actually.
That policy has influenced the International Council of Nurses policy, which is influencing countries around the world. But it is, I think that this is one way where the American Nurses Association and that standard of practice for environmental health is a leader. And it's a beautiful policy statement. I'm really proud of the work of the American Nurses Association in the development and implementation of that policy.
Yeah, terrific. I just wanted to touch back a little bit, and I know we're getting close to our time being over, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the difficulty that I have seen in procurement issues, in at least in my work in the U.S., partly because, as you mentioned, we don't have full transparency in terms of what are harmful elements of a particular product or process. And secondly, because at least what my experiences has been is a commitment to first cost rather than life cycle cost. So we really just look for the cheapest thing. But to hear you talk about the work that you're doing internationally with procurement gives me a bit of hope. Do you amplify that?
It is a really challenging subject, and it is a daunting but exciting project that I'm beginning to work on. You mentioned the lack of understanding and incorporating the total cost of ownership, or even the broader than that, the life cycle of a product in procurement decisions. And there is now a policy in Europe through the European Union called Promoting the Circular Economy, which is contributing to that. And in fact, at the end of next month, there will be a workshop sponsored by the European Union and facilitated by UN Environment Program, UNEP, about how to calculate and integrate life cycle assessment into procurement decisions. And I am looking forward to hearing the results of that work. Healthcare Without Harm in the U.S. has a tool called the Total Cost of Ownership, which has made a real big difference in helping those 1,500 hospitals that are actively engaged in environmentally preferable procurement to be able to say, you know, what were the cost of manufacturing? What is the distribution and transportation? And then what is the cost of the waste of this product? And can we procure products for reduced waste or procure products that can be reused or recycled or reprocessed in a way so we have less waste and less emissions? And thinking about the National Health Service in England is the one health service in the whole world that has done the most extensive carbon footprinting of their practices and products. And what they've discovered is between 65 and 75% of their carbon emissions come from procurement. So the NHS has a whole series of tools and resources on their website that you can search for, or we can put a link on the AnyWeb, that are called Procurement for Carbon Reduction. And one of the tools, a really interesting tool, they call a MAC curve or a marginal abatement curve, where they calculate what's the cost of a product that is lower carbon and how much carbon does it save. And so they can identify hotspots, and they can also identify what are the practices that they can implement that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and save money, because there are many, many pieces of practice and products that will do both. So finding that very sweet spot among the hotspots of carbon emissions is really key.
That sounds like a terrific tool, and I look forward to being able to follow the leadership, not only of that program that you just mentioned for greenhouse gas reduction and procurement, but also through chemical policy from Europe. You know, if we understand better what's in similar chemicals, then it in the end will help protect us as well, I hope. Well, Susan, this has just been fascinating, and I know that I've taken a fair amount of your time already. I do want to just ask, what, because you are a international expert on sustainability in healthcare, particularly hospitals, and also have, you know, so much experience with policy development, with different international perspectives, with your own leadership in nursing and in other areas. What is your advice to us, either to us as nurses or to us as citizens, Americans, anybody? What would you encourage us with?
Well, my advice, get involved. Learn about an issue that you can really dig deep in and learn more about and develop some expertise. To the extent, you know, as nurses, whenever you learn more about these links between health and environment, you become a great asset to your community. And you can help your neighbors and your friends and the public in general to understand how important it is to protect our environment and what an impact environmental protection laws, whether they are national or global, can do to, in my case as a child, allow me to eat fish that were polluted when I was young. If that policy is undermined now, as this current administration is trying to do, we're going to go back in time. You know, we can't let this happen, and we have to be aware, we have to be awake, and we have to be thoughtful and careful about how we communicate so that we bring people with us to advocate for what makes sense for health, for the health of children, for the health of the environment, and so that we protect this beautiful planet where we live.
Terrific. And that was just spoken so much like a nurse. Thank you so much for that.
You know, Beth, as I said at the beginning, I live on a little boat. I'm floating right now on the Salish Sea in the south end of Puget Sound. And when the sea level is rising as it does, I could just float away. While I love to be afloat I also like to be attached to my dock. And I really appreciate your time today. I really appreciate the work of Annie and all of the ways that the nurses who are involved in Annie are an inspiration for all of us. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Susan. Thank you for the time. And thank you all for listening to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast today. Check us out at envirn.org. That's ENVIRN. And also, please leave a review for us on the Apple Podcasts on iTunes. Thanks, and talk to you next time.